The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
So it all went down 4 years ago, and we all remember it. Cliven Bundy and his sons refused to pay federal grazing fees and then stared down the government agents as they attempted to confiscate their cattle. It kicked off an armed standoff with many people fearing outcomes like Ruby Ridge. After the situation cooled, Cliven and his two sons and a militia member were arrested. And in the words of Cliven Bundy, they were political prisoners ever since. Yesterday, a federal judge threw out the government's case against the Bundys and set them all free. The judge used the words flagrant and reckless, not for the Bundys. Those were the words she used to describe the government and the way they withheld evidence from the defense. It turns out the information the federal agents were withholding were information regarding records about surveillance at the Bundy Ranch, maps about the government surveillance, records about the presence of government snipers, FBI logs about activities at the ranch leading up to the standoff, a 2012 law enforcement assessment that found that the Bundys posed no threat, and internal affairs reports about misconduct by BLM agents. Holy cow! Imagine if we went to war with a country and our soldiers misbehaved, we did all kinds of research on it, we had all kinds of facts that showed none of this was really true, and the people that we went after, there were reports that said they weren't really a threat to us. And then the CIA tried to cover it all up. Well, that's exactly what this sounds like. Although the outcome for the Bundy family turned out happy, the story is troubling for three different reasons. Number one, the Bundys and everyone involved in the standoff enabled this to escalate way out of control. It should have never gotten as far as it did. But number two, the government likewise went off the rails with this in the way that they behaved is insane for America. A massive surveillance operation, snipers, out of control BLM agents, and then trying to lie to cover it all up. And number three, this is the most important. This story is much larger than the Bundys, the misconduct of the federal agents, and most of the other headlines that you're going to see about this story. It's bigger than this. The story really is about one thing. The federal government has zero business managing public land, period. Judge Navarro called the government's actions in handling the Bundy case, quote, a reckless disregard for constitutional obligations, end quote. Yes, somebody who's actually a judge used the word constitution in their ruling in an appropriate way. But I contend the entire premise for the government seizing land and then charging private citizens to work on it is also a reckless disregard for constitutional obligations. Here's a notice to Washington, D.C. You have no right meddling or managing public land. The people who live around the land are much more qualified and they care much more. It belongs to the 321 million people that live here in America. And quite honestly, as somebody who has a piece of land that is surrounded by public land, we don't want your help. Nor do we need it.
It's Tuesday, January 9th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I hope to have the Bundys on. This is a real day of vindication for them. And, you know, I had the Bundys on, and I really agreed with them. I disagreed with the way they handled it, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't a vindication of how they handled it.
No, it's not.
It's a vindication of their legal case, right? I mean, and their arguments that they made many times that the government was overreaching.
The government was out of control. The government is out of control. And they were right. And when I had them on, I just kept saying to them, but don't behave this way. You can't put a sniper on a bridge or encourage people to do that.
Yeah. I mean, I think, like, there was a long period there where they were seen as these horrible people. And you know, you talk to them. They definitely were not.
They were not horrible.
Horrible people. And this is a big deal. You know, these stories, you know, it's something about our news cycle in which these stories come and go, and the conclusions are not part of the cycle.
Yeah.
You know, here's a big conclusion. You know, a lot of people argued that the government was doing things that it should not have been doing, and now the courts agree. It's a big deal.
It's a really big deal, but it won't get the kind of coverage that the original arrest and everything else.
And just quickly on this, you know, one of the big things is that look at what they're doing. There are people there, and the Bundys were never the ones doing this, but there are people there supporting them that were threatening federal agents, that were pointing guns at them.
Not good.
Right now, our FCC commissioner is having to cancel public appearances because of death threats over net neutrality. This is happening currently. Have you heard a word about it from the same people who were covering the Bundy situation? This is not a situation that is getting even remotely close to the amount of attention that the Bundy situation got at the time. So when the government is shown to have screwed this up and acted inappropriately, there's no real coverage of it. And now that people on the left are threatening multiple public officials.
Multiple.
Administrator
for the EPA has to have $2 million of personal security now because their life is in danger. Because they're the administrator of the EPA.
Well, the left loved administrators.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They love them. They love them. As long as you're administrating what they want, which gets us into Google, and we'll talk about that coming up later on in the program. Today, we posted at glennbeck.com. We've broken my 2018 predictions down into four different categories. And these, I do not put these into the category, some of them I do, of like the caliphate. This is me looking for things that I say, okay, so what's trending? What do I think is going to happen? You know, the some of the predictions that I have made in the past, quite honestly, I don't, I didn't have to think about those. They just hit me. So I just want to separate, these are Glenn predictions, if you will, that I sat down and said, okay, so what are the trends doing? So I put a few predictions down, and I think some of them are right, but we're asking you to vote, and for the next couple of days, they will be broken up in chunks. Today, they're all political, and you can find them at glennbeck.com.
And the idea is to kind of rank them as to what is the most likely to come true.
Yeah, and some of them are going to be hard because there's some of them that have several predictions in each one. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so, you know, which one is going to come true? Which one do you think
you're not backing out of this? Are you backing out of this? Is that what's happening?
No.
Are we seeing this already? We're just starting, and you're
40
backing
of them, and there is going to be 39 that you're going to be able to beat me with a stick on. next year. Okay, so here's prediction number one: the freedom movement will experience a bit of a renaissance, both in the U.S. and globally. In the U.S., this will mostly manifest at the local level and be primarily pushed by millennial and Generation Z voters who will be completely disenchanted by the two major political parties. We'll see hundreds of new candidates from new political parties running in state, county, and local elections. Both Democrat and Republican parties will be forced to contend with significant weakness in recruiting and retaining younger voters, ultimately forcing them to change their platform stances to accommodate millennial and post-millennial Generation Z ideas and positions. Also, a new understanding of a kinder and more ethical capitalism will be rediscovered by millennials over socialism in the coming years. A new strain of, quote, non-hippie libertarianism will be formed. We'll see the early signs of this movement in 2018. It will be the alternative to a Bernie Sanders-style socialism. What do you think?
I'm going to go with disagree.
Go with disagree
on that one.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, that's not happening.
Yes,
the American people don't care about that stuff anymore. I honestly do think that, like, there is...
This is driven by millennials, though. I think they do care.
You know,
they don't care about the they don't care about the parties, and they don't believe in any of that.
But I disagree. They're super passionate about the parties. If anything has been taught to us over the past couple of years, I think, is that people really freaking care about that red versus blue battle. It is the most important thing in politics that they care about. It's that. And look, that summarizes a lot of things. A lot of things that are really material, right? I mean, real policy differences. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of it in there. I just don't think that that's the primary concern of people who, you know, the average person who's not listening to 15, 30 hours of talk radio every week. The average person cares only about that red versus blue battle. So the idea that they're going to lock into some third party or some out of the system thing, I'm going to go ahead and disagree on that.
Okay, well, I just think that millennials, generally speaking, are going to, they're so disgusted by all of it. They don't believe either side. They believe one side or the other more. But they don't. They're disgusted by it, and it's going to get worse and worse and worse. And they are going to. There's just a new. I think there's a new attitude coming with the leaders of millennials. Remember, it takes 10% to really change things. 18% is the tipping point. So it's not going to. I mean, I'm not talking about 80% of millennials doing this.
Right.
I'm talking about a good chunk of them.
I think four of them doing anything would be a bit of a renaissance. Don't count those guys out. I'm not, you know, counting them out, but I do think that what we're seeing now, in my opinion, is more of an association of, yeah, you're right, they're sick of it. They're sick of the way things are going.
Yeah.
But what that how they crystallize that in their own lives is attacking the other side.
So
they're sick of those people, not themselves.
So in this, both Republican and Democratic parties will be forced to contend with significant weaknesses in recruiting and retaining younger voters. What that includes in there is the Democrats are going to move to more socialist ideas. They are going to Bernie Sanders thing. And I don't know if it'll be with Bernie Sanders, but the Bernie Sanders thing, socialism is going to become very, very popular. But at the same time, a new understanding of freedom, one that actually that actually believes in diversity. That actually says, yeah, I don't care if you get married or not, the government shouldn't be involved. I don't care if you go to church or you don't go to church, the government shouldn't be involved. Are you a decent person? Are you hurting people? Are you like stealing money? Are you trying to take people's stuff? Are you trying to kill people? It's going to be boiled down to a much simpler, more constitutional Bill of Rights kind of freedom on the other side.
I feel like we're both looking outside and seeing really dark clouds, and I'm predicting rain and you're predicting suntan time. You're predicting laying out by the pool and it's 40 degrees, and for some reason you're thinking it's all going to clear and go to 80 later on in the afternoon, so get your bathing suits on.
I cannot believe how much we've flipped places.
You are way more optimistic on this. I have no hope on these things anymore.
You used to be the guy saying the exact opposite to me.
Yes, that's true.
That's weird.
And I've been proven wrong, clearly.
Okay, next prediction. Churches will continue to lose power and influence through 2018. Those who preach politics over principles and power over people in their own communities will lose more and more influence. The more hellfire that is preached, the bigger the hit. Even though in times of strife and demagoguery, these flourish for a short time, but they will collapse. Traditional institutions that claim to be infallible and that discourage thought and honest questions on their own doctrine will be hardest hit. At the same time, megachurches that are more show will suffer and shed sheep to flocks who embody through quiet and humble action a simple, happy, and charitable life.
It's interesting. I mean, because you were talking about millennials. And what is it now? A third of millennials think the church does more damage
yes.
to society than good for society. I mean, I think you're right. The one place you should be able to chase principle with no pragmatism at all is church. You should never make a church based on a decision when you're talking about faith-based things that's, you know, that's related to pragmatism, right? What I want to go into church and them to tell me the thing that seems most obvious is the thing you shouldn't do because of this guiding principle from this book that's really old that we've been talking about for a long time.
Right.
And I think a lot of churches have gone, and we've certainly seen it on the left and I think increasingly on the right, that have looked at the world and have formed their message based on the world and how it's moved rather than a stone tablet, right? Or the place where it lives
yeah,
all the time and
but
it never changes.
But it's also, I think there's a difference now coming on, I'm on action. I do not want to just go sit in a church.
Mm-hmm.
I want something that changes my life. I want something that goes out and does good. I want to be involved in doing things and helping people and show it to me. Don't talk to me about it. Let's do it.
And feel it, right? I mean,
yeah. I think that's what's coming. I think the pomp and circumstance, the traditional ways that we have connected religiously are falling away. And the churches that figure out that a church is just a place, it's a building, a real church, you should be in it all the time. And it's everywhere. It's everywhere you go. And it's how you live your life. I think those will prosper. We'll see. More in a second.
All right, GlennBeck.com is the place to go to see all of Glenn's predictions on politics today. You can also sign up for the email newsletter and get all of them all at once.
And vote for them.
And vote to see which one you think is going to be most likely to happen and which one you think has no freaking chance. You're going to have lots of opportunities on that one.
All right. Paying off debt can take forever, and it piles up fast, but it doesn't have to be that way. If you own a home and you have some equity, refinancing to consolidate and pay off your debt can make life a lot easier. But is it the right choice for your situation? A great way to tell is by making a 10-minute call to the salary-based mortgage consultants at American Financing. These are the guys that have access to every loan in the industry and will only offer refi options if they really make sense for your financial goals. So maybe it's cashing out to pay off that high interest debt, or maybe it's just realizing that you're still paying a few $100 on unnecessary PMI because you've reached the threshold for removal. Whatever the case, American Financing can review your current mortgage and look at options that may lower your monthly payments or help you achieve a better financial status. AmericanFinancing.net. You're going to find straightforward and effortless mortgage experience. AmericanFinancing.net or call them 800-906-2440. Call them now 800-906-2440. 1-800-906-2440 or AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Glad you're here. The third prediction at glennbeck.com on politics. We're going to unveil these for the rest of the week. In sections, tech, medicine, etc. Here's the politics. Here's the third one, and you can vote on these. Hillary Clinton and Uma are going to be charged with crimes. Yeah, no, I was kidding. I wrote that at the end. I'm like, yeah, that would be fun, but Bitcoin is more likely to be at $1 million next Friday than that happening. So, more of the predictions, and you can get them all by signing up at glenbeck.com. You can also vote on these predictions, and I'd love to hear you know, what you think is just crazy talk, and you know, you can vote up or down which ones you think are most likely to happen. Do that now at glenbeck.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
All right. Today we're talking politics and what's on the horizon for 2018. You can find them at glennbeck.com, and you can upvote the ones that you think are most likely to happen. Prediction number four. The press at large will continue to discredit themselves and be discredited by the White House. And it will happen on both sides. MSNBC and Breitbart and others that will play to the rabid core of the right or left will prosper over the short term during the run-up to the midterms. It will be the same approach that will precipitate a quick downfall in the early 2020s.
Your date on Breitbart might have been a little early.
Yeah, I know.
As that one seems to be falling apart at the president's desk right now.
Do you know, have any idea how Breitbart is faring? Have you seen any Google Analytics or anything?
I have not seen that. I mean, I know obviously there was reporting of you know, their traffic and stuff going down earlier, but yeah. I think with this,
I think Breitbart is in real trouble if they do not distance themselves from Bannon.
Right. I mean,
if fire Bannon, they can repair it, but right.
Again, we've said this before. There's people there that are good. It's got obviously a considerable history in conservative circles. I mean, you know, Breitbart was the guy who built the site. Mm-hmm. Bannon, he hijacked it. So, I mean, you can go back, I think. I don't think that generally speaking, the conservative audience is would hold them to what Bannon has done to that
Correct.
Site. I think that they would be able to recover because
Me
of the
too.
History. I mean,
Me
I, you know, I think the move of getting him out of there would be really helpful.
Thought that it was going to happen because the Mercers distanced themselves from everybody was distancing themselves. And there was talk that the board met last Thursday. But
yeah, the fact that he's still there,
he
thinks he's staying.
Yeah, he's
right?
staying.
You know, it's gonna that stuff happens usually pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And once it starts to drag on like this and he's still there, I mean,
it's his arrogance that has gotten him in trouble.
He's got a lot of, you know, he's got a lot of power over there, and he's going to try to, he's obviously tried to already backstep and worm from the ultimate alpha male. He's tried to backstep himself out of that Trump comment and the Don Jr. stuff.
I wonder how different it would have been if Roy Moore would have won.
Yeah, because it's interesting. The Wolf book was over the time, and a big part of the focus was on the time where he felt triumphant over the Moore thing. Remember, it was Moore, he was picking Roy Moore, and Trump had picked Luther Strange.
And there's a whole chapter on the book about that.
Mm-hmm.
And Bannon is saying, you know, I was the only one that was standing for principles. I was the one doing this, and this is what Trumpism is supposed to be about. But he wouldn't do it.
Right. And I was proved correct with Roy Moore. I won.
Right.
Well, now, obviously, we know the end of that story, which is we have a Democratic senator in Alabama.
Right.
So maybe he didn't win. And look, you know, as the president said, once he said something about Bannon, his tune changed pretty quick. And now he's trying to back himself out. He's trying to do the Homer Simpson disappear into the bush routine.
Yeah.
Whether that's going to work or not, I don't know. Maybe it will.
The Me Too movement is going to continue to grow in 2018-19, and 2018-19 will be the apex of the witch hunt. In 2018, it will be used to discredit Donald Trump and then spread to the midterms. It sadly will become a joke in the end. It will not be effective, I don't think, against Donald Trump. However, it will destroy what positive brand image, if any, the GOP still has with anyone under 35. it will also hurt the actual cries of victims.
So you think it turns into
just a political witch hunt. With the midterms coming, it's going to be so overdone, and they're going to use this on Donald Trump that it's going to become it's just going to be split down the middle, because it's all just about politics, period.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what it seems like it's coming to now. Did you hear the Ben Shapiro comments on this?
On Oprah's speech?
Yeah, on the whole speech thing. Because, I mean, it's the amount of denial you have to be in to act like Hollywood is leading the charge in the Me Too movement when they're responsible for almost all of it is just insane. Ben Shapiro talked about that. Listen.
I mean, what the hell kind of risk was she taking? She was standing in front of an entire town filled with sexual abusers and harassers. Mm. She said nothing about it for 20 years. She's being cheered by people who said nothing about it for 20 years. And there she is, pretending that she's leading the fight. In what way has she led the fight? I sort of missed it. And just because she said some stuff last night, I haven't seen how things have materially changed. I mean, Reese Witherspoon was mentioned that she measures things before Oprah and after Oprah. What changed after Oprah? Oprah said a bunch of stuff. Well, I was under the impression that most of us agreed with that stuff when this stuff first broke, and she lauded the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. Where were they reporting on the sexual harassment and abuse scandal for the last 20 years? It is literally their job to cover Hollywood, and yet it took The New Yorker and Ronan Farrow to uncover all this stuff. Where was the Hollywood Foreign Press Association receiving such plaudits at the hands of Oprah Winfrey? Again, a woman who is good friends with Harvey Weinstein, being cheered by Meryl Streep, a woman who gave a standing ovation to Roman Polanski.
Ben Shapiro almost made my prediction list. He almost did.
Yeah.
Yeah. I almost put Ben Shapiro will be the leader of the new conservative thought movement. He's fantastic. He is absolutely fantastic.
That's great.
Let's see. I've got some gun rights stuff. I've only got time for maybe
just quickly. Just before we move on, do almost predictions count? Like you said, you thought you almost put them on the list. Do we give you credit for that if it happens? I'm just curious because it's one of those.
I didn't think it was a. I didn't think it was a real.
You'll be claiming credit, of course.
Of course, I will.
Okay.
Yeah. Of course, I will. Sure. Yeah. So the gun rights activists. And advocates will finally get their long-sought concealed carry reciprocity bill through Congress. I believe that's going to happen this year.
That's a big one.
It's a huge one.
So this would mean if I get a concealed carry permit in Texas, I can go to New York or Washington, D.C.
and carry it.
And they can't stop me.
Yeah. Well, they can, like New York City could stop you. It's like reciprocity. I can't ever say that word. Mm-hmm. It means that, like, for instance, I go to some states that I have a concealed carry. I can't carry my gun, even though they have a concealed carry permit. I can't carry my gun because they don't accept my gun license there, but they'll accept my driver's license. So in states or in areas where you cannot drive, they're not going to accept your driver's license. I was on the road with a car, officer. Yeah, we don't drive in this state. We don't drive here. So if they're issuing gun license, then you have your gun license is in Texas. It's good in Maine. It's good in Massachusetts. It's good in South Carolina. It's good wherever, just like a driver's license.
Right. Well, but I mean, they can't. There's this constitutionally guaranteed right. They can't.
But the way I see it, okay, could be wrong. The way I see it is that you're just going to be. You have one gun license, just like a driver's license. However, when I go to Montana, the state says there's a minimum speed limit, and I think the minimum is like 55 miles an hour, and you can the maximum is like 120. Well, just because I have a license in that state doesn't mean I can go, you know, 90 miles an hour in Texas. You have to follow the local laws, but
it would,
your license is good there,
but it would guarantee you the right to carry. You'd obviously still have to follow laws.
Not necessarily in California.
Really?
If you can't carry in California.
But you can, I mean, you have to be able to.
I know.
Multiple Supreme Court decisions.
If you can't carry in New York City, then you can't carry.
You just have to. Because I mean, all has the issue to be, with carrying in New York City, right, is it's difficult to get the right to do that. It's difficult.
Correct.
It's actually not at all difficult to get the right to do it. It's guaranteed to you.
Yes.
But it's difficult to get the privilege to execute that right.
Correct.
In New York City. But my thought would be, if you have a license, you can go to these other places and you already have the license. The license is the thing that's hard to get in New York City, right? So if you have the license coming in, wouldn't you be able to carry in that region?
I mean,
you know more about this stuff than
I think in a perfect world, yes.
Yes, they're going to fight that, obviously,
yeah,
every step of the way.
That is going to be fought every step of the way. A big enough step would be that I can carry in all 50 states as long as I'm abiding by the local rules.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, that seems so
I can't carry.
Obvious.
I can't, if you get onto a plane, you can't, well, you can't carry on the plane, but... After you unload it from the six boxes you've had to break it up in, you can't carry it in all states.
Well, this would be either way a really positive thing. And with control of all, get this done in 2018, because if you lose the House or the Senate, you're never going to get it done.
The U.S. Supreme Court will finally strike down pro-labor laws that will enable unions to take dues from workers. That would be huge.
Seems obvious, too.
The Trump administration will actually finally begin construction on a true wall between U.S. and Mexico using discretionary funds provided for border protection and law enforcement and the new infrastructure spending by the Republican-controlled Congress in early 2018. There will be a compromise on the Dreamers as well as an agreement to renew NAFTA.
You feel comfortable with that sort of arrangement? Hey, all the Dreamers get to stay and we'll have all this DACA stuff going on. And on the other side, you'll get some, you're not going to get the wall as promised, but you'll get some portion of the wall.
If I believed that we had the wall, I would be willing to talk about other things. I'm not happy about it. I don't want to, but I'd be willing to.
And that's essentially Trump's
position,
right?
A wall.
Right.
Yeah.
It seems like that's Trump's position. However, a wall means what to you? I'm curious because we, you know,
not what we're going to get.
Because I think what we will get is stretches of wall that basically justify the claim that we built a wall. Right.
Here's what I want.
Rather than a wall, you know, a border to border type of situation.
I want a wall where it makes sense to have a wall. And then I want a wall of technical or human security where it doesn't make sense to have a wall.
Right. Where there's maybe.
Right. I don't want any holes in the border. I don't want like, hey, look over here, it's a wall. Yeah, but look over here and there's a line of people walking into America. I want security.
Mm-hmm.
Antifa, coupled with Occupy Wall Street and others, will be funded through Soros-based organizations to stir up an impeach Trump movement, a march and sit-ins. It will rise and fall in importance and significance, but will impact the 2018 midterms and 2020 election.
2018 to me seems to be the year you have to go for impeachment if you're the Democrats.
Yes.
Because once you get past 2018 and you're into 2019, the presidential campaign starts. It's going to be I mean, impeaching him would do what? Give Mike Pence a nice runway to win?
Yeah.
So I think like at that point, you really can't. You got to do it this year or you don't do it.
And the last one, I think maybe we should save. We'll take a quick break and then maybe save because it's about Russia and what I think is going to happen with the Russia investigation.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of stuff that needs to be discussed on that one. We'll get to that coming up in a second. And you can find them at glennbeck.com.
And don't forget to vote at glennbeck.com because you can rank them in as to order of what you think is going to come true. And this will give you a little bit of responsibility as well because
I'd love to see what the audience thinks.
Yeah, I'll see which ones they believe is true.
You're not ranking them necessarily. Vote up for everything that you think is going to come true.
And the other one is vote down. My prediction is, and I don't think this matters to you, but that Alabama will win the next 14 national championships. That's my prediction.
Huh.
And I'm making it today.
Okay.
I'm sure you watched the game last night. Obviously,
oh my
you didn't
gosh,
go to a
I
movie on your anniversary or anything.
Not with my whole family, no. I saw Darkest Hour again last night. Is there any symbolism in the fact that your wife wanted to go to the darkest hour on your anniversary?
Or to be in the dark with me, but surrounded by witnesses.
Other people. Yeah. Separated by children.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably... Yeah, let's not think about that.
Okay.
Been telling you about Blinds.com for several reasons. They're a group of people that I really, really like, and they can completely transform your home. Tanya and I have had the best customer service that we have ever experienced, and it is the same for a lot of people who have taken my advice and gone to Blinds.com. Mark from Tempe, Arizona said, heard about Blinds.com through Glenn Beck and had faith in his suggestion. It was amazing. The service, the quick delivery, and the installation was a breeze. They look fantastic. I ordered more 2 weeks later, and I feel the same way. I'll tell all my friends. Go to Blinds.com today and be treated the way you expect to be treated, how you deserve to be treated. Find the perfect blind, shade, shutters, drapes, and upgrade your home for less than almost any other home improvement you could do. They'll send you free samples, free shipping, plus you get free design consultation if you want it, and they'll guide you through the installation step by step. So find out yourself why 20 million Americans have already trusted Blinds.com to upgrade their home. Making Blinds.com the number one online retailer of custom window coverings. Hear the stories. Make one yourself. Save a ton at Blinds.com/back, where they always have great prices, and even now they're even better. Blinds.com/back and save. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions do apply.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. Glenn Beck.
All right. So here's the last one. I don't know if we're going to be able to really fully get into this, so let me read it, and then maybe we'll spend some time on it next hour. The Mueller-led investigation into Russia election hacking and any connection to the Trump administration will finally be put to rest with basically zero impact on the Trump administration. No significant charges being leveled.
No additional. I mean, like, you're,
yeah, nobody's, like, nobody, the, yeah, no, no, nobody's going to go to jail for this. Nobody will go to jail.
So the, okay. Because, I mean, obviously, there's been
I'm out on a limb on this,
right?
One. I am so torn on this one because the reason why I say the special counsel will likely issue a report that is strongly anti-Russia and broadly implies that there were attempts by Russia and Russian agents to influence the election in favor of Trump. The report will be light on evidence or specifics, and no one will pay attention. Now, there's more to this that I have to get to because I think there is trouble on the horizon connected to this investigation.
Glenn Beck.
But because of
Mercury.
Russia's power.
Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
So do you remember the name James Damore? James Damore was the senior software engineer at Google. He was fired last August for his internal memo that was titled Google's Ideological Echo Chamber. In this, he criticized the diversity policies of Google. He said that they actually result in reverse discrimination and suppress conservative political points of view. The media jumped on this. It got all kinds of attention at the time, mainly because Damore's memo was painted as, yes, anti-diverse and sexist. So Damore dared to point out that men and women have biological and personality differences that might account for different professional and personal priorities. What a Neanderthal! Grab the club! He said that Google's culture of bias included programs, mentoring, and classes only for people with a certain gender or race, and that they prioritize diversity candidates. Well, Google didn't like that much, and so they fired him. Ridiculous overreaction by Google and really fascistic in nature. By firing Damore, Google basically confirmed, yeah, you can't speak out if you have a different opinion. No one at Google, no one in the media seemed to appreciate the respectful, well-reasoned arguments that he made in his memo. Nobody seemed to appreciate that. He was just a Neanderthal. They only had blind rage towards his discussion of gender. It couldn't be heard. Well, he's now fighting back. Yesterday, he filed a class action lawsuit against Google, and here's his claim. You don't hear this every day. He said, Google unfairly discriminates against white men who have perceived conservative political views that are unpopular with its executives. Another Google employee, David Grudman, joined Damore in the lawsuit, and they're going for the throat. The suit alleges that Google uses, quote, illegal hiring quotas to fill its desired percentages of women and favored minority candidates, end quote, and that, quote, the presence of Caucasians and males is mocked with boos during company-wide weekly meetings, end quote. Google's unhinged response to the Damore memo is the end result of progressive extremism. When you promote diversity as the end all, the be all of all of your virtues, and then you fire somebody for actually being diverse, I don't know if you noticed this, but you violate your own ultimate virtue. It's hypocrisy. You people should stay away from designing any kind of AI. Now, I say this, and I can say this, because currently at my workplace, I won't get fired for saying it.
It's Tuesday, January 9th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
You know, I don't think people understand the word diversity. We if we want to be diverse, then we have to listen to reasoned arguments that we disagree with. We have to have people present all kinds of different options, but nobody's really interested in that anymore. It's one way, either left or right. It's one way, and it cannot be anything other than that one way. And if you don't agree with it 100%, there's something wrong with you. You're a traitor. You're a sellout, whatever it is. How did we get here?
Yes, incredible anger if you hear that opposite opinion. I don't understand it. I mean, it's how do you form your opinions if you're only hearing one side of an equation and everything else
that's
you consider
indoctrination.
Hateful? Yeah, it's indoctrination.
And quite honestly, how many of us have read the Michael Wolff book?
I mean, we have. But
we have.
That's our job.
How
I don't know that
people?
I would if I didn't work here, right? I mean, like, I don't know that I would be interested
would hope,
in it.
I would hope that I would. I don't know if I'd be interested. If I cared about politics, I would hope that I would.
It's just such a spectacle, you know. I mean, I guess I would want to know for myself what was real and what wasn't.
We learned a lot in it, and it had nothing to do with Trump. It had nothing to do with Trump. We learned a lot by reading it. And if you're not making yourself uncomfortable, then you're not growing.
Right. I mean, there are times where indoctrination is important. For example, I've indoctrinated my children to be Philadelphia Eagles fans.
Right.
And when they walk through the grocery store and they see someone with a Dallas Cowboy shirt on, they look at me and they say, ew, dad, yucky. I have them to the point where they think it's a visible scar to see that stupid star on a shirt. That's how hard I've worked at that. That's indoctrination. That's not good for everything. You don't want to do that when it comes to politics. You don't want to do that. Now, with the Eagles, obviously, you do want to do it. But in other parts of your life, that's not a good approach.
You know, one of the reasons why I think we lose our children in faith is we don't allow them to discover it themselves. We just tell them this is the way it is, and we're going to church. And you're going to do this, and this is what we believe. We need to foster questions. We need to, I want my children, I had a really hard time getting my children into a school, into a Christian school, because we're Mormons, and God forbid you have a Mormon. And I even went to the leadership of these schools that were turning us down. I said, I don't want you to teach my doctrine. They get my doctrine at home. They get my doctrine at church. I want you to teach what you teach, because it will form questions in their minds. And I want them to have questions.
And the questions come anyway.
Right.
Yeah, like, they're individual people.
Here's what happens. You're not prepared when you go out. For instance, I did my daughters a grave disservice, and I learned this from Hannah, by just focusing on all of the good things of America. Because when she got out and she heard about all the bad things, she no longer trusted me. She was like, well, Dad, you don't know the bad things. And she was kind of right. I didn't. Now I can tell my daughters and my children the worst that we have done. And I focus on that. Here's the bad things that this country has done. Learn these things. Now learn the times that we have been tremendous and try to find those places elsewhere. You don't. You don't find those moments elsewhere. Why? Because there's something special, and it's always a balance. It's always trying to make sure that your ego, your humility is in check, that you're doing it for the right reason. Your kids are not going to be prepared to go out into the world if you haven't already challenged them every step of the way. Why is this true? Why do you believe that? If you haven't played devil's advocate with your kid and really pushed them up against the wall and said, well, what about this? How would you argue about this? People think, well, they're going to get that outside. They need that in here. They need it in a safe zone with you. Otherwise, they're going to get lost. And, I started this with, how did we get here? Stupidity. Self-imposed ignorance. A lack of a desire to even think for yourself. The lack of teaching critical thinking. Listen to this. These are the Antifa protesters. Okay? Antifa. Anti-fascist. How do you define fascism? This is really not a hard question, especially if you've taken the time to get in your car or gone in the subway or the bus to go to some place, and you're standing there as somebody who is anti-fascist. How do you define fascism? Listen.
How would you define what fascism is? I don't know. Okay. How would you define fascism?
It's not an easy thing to define.
How would you define fascism?
I don't really want to get into all of that history and
stuff.
Does
that mean you can't define it, though?
I don't want to talk about it right now.
Fascist ideas.
And how would you define fascism?
People that are here to celebrate fascism or white supremacy.
And how would you define fascism?
Fascism is an increasingly upward, hierarchical model that puts white people and European people at the top.
No, that's not fascism. That's one kind of fascism. That's not fascism. Fascism is silencing all those that have a differing opinion of those who are in the group. However big the group is. Remember, the Nazis didn't start out at the majority. The Nazis didn't end up being in the majority. The Nazis, the real Nazis, were only about 30% of Germany. So it doesn't have to be majority. It just has to be a big enough block to be a bully to say, my way or the highway. You will all conform to whatever it is I think. Now, that can be done religiously. That can be done with atheists. That can be done with people who say, I want to burn all the fossils. I want to dig up and bring back to life dinosaurs and then shove them into a combustion engine just because I know they'll hurt the earth, they can be fascists as well as the hug a tree person. It's my way or the highway, and I am going to gather up enough strength, either through a fear of the mob or the mob becoming the power structure, I'm going to enforce my way on everyone, and if they don't comply, I destroy them. That is fascism. Kind of sounds, in some ways, like working at Google.
It's a right-wing movement, though, as we've all learned from our history books.
No.
Fascism, big right-wing movement.
No, it's a left.
Just checking your math there. A definition of fascism, Merriam-Webster Dictionary. A political philosophy, movement, or regime that exalts nation and often race above the individual and stands for centralized autocratic government headed by a dictatorial leader, severe economic and social regimentation, and forcible suppression of opposition. How on earth is that translated as a right-wing movement? An autocratic government that's centralized.
It can be if you're talking about Steve Bannon.
I don't think it can be.
He wants centralized.
Right, but that is not a conservative philosophy.
Oh, no, I know that.
Yeah.
But if you define conservative as Steve Bannon, which most people on the left do.
And most people, you know, in America do at this point. I think we've just lost those definitions.
Yeah.
You over the years did how many chalkboards where we showed the difference between the European model of left and right
American.
And the American model of left and right. And
it's not the same
right now. I think even in America, we adopt the left, that left.
Yes,
model.
We do.
There's no option really for smaller government
right.
in many ways.
For real freedom.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's going to change.
That was one of your predictions,
it
by
is.
The way, glennbeck.com. You can check them all today. The political predictions are up. You can vote on which one you think is going to come true. One of them was based on the freedom movement. It's actually, I think, in first place right now. People think that there's going to be a renaissance of that freedom movement here and abroad. Hope that's true.
Well, you're seeing it in places like Iran. And the Iran thing we'll get into later this week in predictions. The Iran thing is really fascinating on how that's happening and why that's happening. So doing your holiday shopping, did you shop online? 54% of holiday shoppers visited websites from mobile devices. And that's what scammers see as an opportunity to steal your credit card information and personal data. And they scoop them up. Right now, your information might be being sold on the dark web. You may not even find out about it for a long time. I mean, some of the hacks that have come in on these big institutions, they come in, you don't know about it for 2 years. Well, your information's been out there for 2 years, and once it's on the web, it's done. 1 in 4 people have already experienced identity theft, and that number is going to get higher. If you're only monitoring your credit, your identity can be stolen in ways you can't detect. Thieves can sell your information on the dark web, get an online payday loan in your name, all kinds of things. If LifeLock detects anybody coming near your identity, they have a U.S.-based restoration specialist that's going to work to fix it. Now, nobody can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock is the best in the business, and they uncover threats that you might miss. So join now and get 10% off with the promo code BECK. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK or go to LifeLock.com. Again, use the promo code BECK. That's BECK. Save 10% at LifeLock.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
So do you remember the name Amy Fabrini? They're from Redmond, Oregon. Amy was the young girl who, if you listened to the interview with her, she sounded perfectly fine, perfectly normal. She was deemed by the state to have too low of an IQ to be able to keep her children. Well, they took her son from her after birth at the hospital. and 10 months now have gone by. Some good news happened over the holiday. The Blaze ran the story, quote, essentially the state doesn't have to prove anything definite to take away the child. The argument is that they are going by the experts' recommendation for what's best in this case, because something just could happen. However, the judge ruled differently, and the judge said, no, I don't think so. They both have high school diplomas, and doesn't matter what the state says. They cannot seize their children. They cannot take your children away. If you're in the child protection business, then everything looks like a danger. You always think the worst could happen. And they've returned the 10-month-old now to Amy and is back home. Still, they have, what, 3-year-old? That is out, and now it's, I don't know what they're going to do with that. Because
you can't be expected to get all your kids back. I mean, that's going to, you're going to get, you get one, you got to be happy with that. I mean, obviously they're thrilled with the opportunity to have their own child back, but still, it's got to be still quite a struggle to not have both.
Just so glad that we found out about this story and that it has a happy ending. And it just came over the holiday. Now, there's another one that we can make into a happy ending. This one happened in Michigan over the weekend. There is, on one of our sister stations, there was an intern. Her name is Amity Dewey. I got a note, said, Glenn, just please put her on your prayer list. And found out some more information. She's in critical condition in the hospital in Grand Rapids. She's an 18-year-old girl. She was an intern at one of our stations. And just a girl who has so much potential. She was, you know, when she was in high school, she was making, you know, constitution videos, you know, for the school and everything else. And she decided she wanted to go an intern in radio. She has been dealt a hard hand. Her father, you know, not necessarily a good guy and kind of, you know, left her, abandoned her. So she grew up with her mom. Her mom started dating this guy who was not necessarily a good guy. And they got married 3 years ago. Amity went on a vacation during the holidays. So mom and dad were supposed to go, her stepdad and mom were supposed to go pick her up at the airport. They did. They put the luggage in the back. Halfway home, the stepdad stops the car, gets out, takes a gun, and shoots mom and the 18-year-old girl, and then himself. Mom is dead. Stepdad is dead. And she's in critical condition. Mm. She sure could use your help. She is all alone now. You can go to GoFundMe, look for Help Amity, A-M-E-D-Y, Amity Dewey and Family. Help Amity Dewey and Family. GoFundMe. Help her out. She is alone in the world now and a good, good kid.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I posted something last week on Twitter, and I normally don't talk about this stuff, but I think this is kind of important. The leader of my church died last week, and he was truly a remarkable man. And the reason why I want to bring this up is because the New York Times ran an obituary that is just is so offensive. What is an obituary? What is it? It's to explain somebody's life. The obituary is to say, this is who this person was. The New York Times ran an obituary that said Thomas Monson, the president of the Mormon Church, who rebuffed demands to ordain women as priests and refused to alter church opposition to same-sex marriage, died Tuesday at 90. Is that who he was? Is that who he was? And why did he deny those things? Beckett Adams did a really good article on how the New York Times writes their obituaries. And he used the obituary of Thomas Monson last week and compared it to the New York Times obituary of Fidel Castro. Hugh Hefner really didn't talk about, you know, what Hugh Hefner did and the rapes and the horrible things that happened at the Playboy Mansion. Didn't mention any of that. Hefner created Playboy magazine and spun it into a media and entertainment industry giant. Doesn't seem like there's any controversy there. How about Fidel Castro? Fidel Castro, Cuban revolutionary who defied U.S., dies at 90. Okay, headline. Here's the obituary. Fidel Castro, the fiery apostle of revolution, who brought the Cold War to the Western Hemisphere in 1959 and then defied the United States for nearly half a century as Cuba's maximum leader, bedeviling 11 American presidents and briefly pushing the world to the brink of nuclear war, died on Friday. It continued, claiming the Castro era was one of medical advances. Excuse me? He improved education and healthcare for many Cubans. Admirers from around the world, including some Americans, were impressed with the way that healthcare and literacy in Cuba had improved. Okay. How about the 78,000 people that died trying to flee him? How about that one? How about the 5,300 known to have lost their lives fighting against communism? How about that one? Thomas S. Monson, who is the president of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints since 2008, enlarged the ranks of female missionaries, but rebuffed demands to ordain women as priests and refused to alter church opposition to same-sex marriage, died on Tuesday at his home in Salt Lake City. He was 90. I'm tired of the bigotry on all people of faith, no matter what faith it is. I'm tired of it. Let me tell you who Thomas Monson was. Thomas Monson was a man that served people over himself and really over institutions. There are many stories of him going to some important thing where he's going to be, you know, the main guy that everybody wants to see. And he doesn't show up because halfway there, he found out that there was a woman whose husband had died, was at the hospital and alone. Somebody who was dying themselves that didn't have anybody to hold their hand through the process. He put nothing in front of people. Nothing. I met him once. He was not impressed. I was at a I was in a room. It was for a funeral. And my friend's daughter had died. And Thomas Monson walked in, and this was a important funeral. Anybody who was anybody was there. It was a room full of senators and congressmen, and I think the governor was there. Everybody was there. And before the funeral, we all met in this room with the casket, and it was open. And everybody knew Thomas Monson in this group except me. And so everybody was like, oh, have you met the president of the church? I said, no. Oh, you got to meet him. He's such a great guy, blah, blah, blah. So everybody kind of was like, you know, besides the funeral, you know, it was a big moment for us to meet him. And I stood there with my wife. And he came in and he just said hi quickly to everybody. It was no glad handling at all of anybody. And then he came up to me and he looked me in the eye and he said, nice to meet you. But it was so brief because standing next to my wife were these children. And they were probably 7, 6, 7, 8 years old. Here's this 87-year-old man. He just looks at me and gives me a quick handshake. Nice to meet you. And he's not even finished with nice to meet you or me saying nice to meet you. And he's looking at these children. And he gets down on one knee. And he begins to talk to these children. His whole countenance changed. And he got down on his knees so he was eye level with them. And he said, how are you doing? What's happening? So what do you want to do when you grow up? What's going to happen here? And he talked to children in a way that I had never heard before. And I thought to myself, he is childlike. He can work in this world, but he has not lost that. He was more interested in the children than he was of anybody important. Then he stood up and he took my friend by the hand and he stood in front of the coffin and I listened to him. And he comforted my friend in a way I have never heard before. He talked about her beauty and her soul and how her pain was over. And he spoke with such a surety that I knew he knew where she was. Shame on the New York Times. An obituary is to tell us who that person was. You focused on the political. Shame on you. And to those who loved Thomas Monson as I did, happy day. He is finally reunited with his wife, and there was a celebration, as there will be, hopefully, when all of us return. There was a celebration. He is home, and I know it, because I know he returned to his Father in heaven like a child. I want to talk to you about Liberty Safe. 2018, they're coming out with just great safes and great deals. If you've been on the fence about buying a Liberty Safe, this is something that will really give you peace of mind, knowing that your valuables, your firearms, your important documents, your irreplaceable items are locked up and secured by America's number one safe, a Liberty Safe. We live in tornado area, and you know, I've collected some pretty amazing things over the years. We have put them in a Liberty Safe and locked them down and bolted it to the foundation because we know it's not going anywhere. I've seen Liberty Safes sucked up in a tornado and dropped three blocks away, and they're still closed. And you open them, and they're fine. I have seen houses in California that had a Liberty Safe. There is nothing left from the fire but the Liberty Safe and the chimney. Everything else is gone. Open it up, and there are the papers. Peace of mind. And right now, through January 22nd, you can get into Liberty's new Tough USA series for $8.99, $9.99, or $10.99. Plus, you're going to get Liberty's 12 months interest-free on payments and payments as low as $20 a month on approved credit. So save huge right now. Huge. Huge. Not from China. Made here in America. Liberty. Do it now. Liberty Safe. Go now and save big. LibertySafe.com. That's LibertySafe.com.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. Glenn Beck.
So I went to, it was my 18th anniversary.
Fancy dinner.
No, we went to On the Border.
On the Tex-Mex?
Yeah, I went to On the Border.
I mean, delicious chips and queso I'll give you, but
and
still.
Had that, and then had it with our whole family, all the kids.
The kids
yeah.
were
yeah.
there at the anniversary dinner.
Yeah, yeah.
At the Tex-Mex restaurant.
Yes. And then we went
to... The chain Tex-Mex restaurant.
Yes. And then we went to Darkest Hour.
A movie.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And a movie theater.
Yes. With the whole family. And apparently of some people who listened to the program because they walked in and they were like, "Hey, Glenn, you're really here on your anniversary." And I'm like, yeah, yeah, yeah. But you have to go see this movie.
I really want to.
You have to go see this movie. It's better even the second time around. It was so good, so well done. And here's a really conservative guy. And the truth is being told about history. And the truth is being told about the West and what we did. And it's fantastic.
On those rare occasions where that happens, we should support those
movies.
We
should. Yeah. And not nice to go to support it because we should just support this movie because they tried. No, this is a great movie.
And he won the Golden Globe, right?
Yes.
For Gary
Best
Oldman.
Actor.
Yeah.
He nails Churchill.
I couldn't.
Really good.
I had seen the previews for it, and I saw the name Gary Oldman, but that's one of those names that, like, I know, but I don't necessarily associate with a face.
Yeah.
And then I saw him accepting the award, and then you can kind of see his face in there. It does it. You can't even tell it's the same person.
No, it's amazing. He nails it.
Oh, man.
He nails it. There's times, especially the second time I watched it, because I was really kind of watching it more technically the second time, and there are times that I was like, that's him. That is Churchill. It's amazing. He just nailed it. And it's so good. Funny, uplifting. My kids loved it. I mean, my kids don't go to movies like that. Love it. They loved it. Mm. Loved it. So anyway, and then, you know, we went home and I got Tanya.
You could stop the details of your anniversary now. You don't need to continue from here on.
I think this just says a lot about us. I got her a pie. Coconut
as
cream
a
pie.
As a present?
She just laughed. And I'm like, what? And she said, open your present. Opened it up, and it was a loaf of bread. So
you got a pie and a loaf of bread in exchange for your anniversary?
Yes. I don't know if 18 is pie and bread, but that's
what
it was for
definitely
us.
Not.
Yeah, we were like, we're sick. Because next week we're going to go very strict on our eating. The whole family is going. We're just very strict, and so I think we both had the same thing in mind of enjoy it.
Yeah, indulge now.
Indulge
before
right
the,
now.
Before the darkest hour comes
yes.
next week.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Did you take her to Jumanji by any chance? Was that a part of it?
That was at Christmas, and we should talk about Jumanji because I went not happy. I wasn't happy about it.
To go see Jumanji.
Yeah, because I wasn't a real big fan of, I mean, and Robin Williams was hysterical. And so I wasn't real, you know, I wasn't a fan of the first Jumanji.
I don't think most people were. I was,
yeah. And the second one, I'm like, okay, it's got The Rock in it. And there's nothing against The Rock. He makes good movies.
Yeah,
and everything
I
else.
Like The Rock.
I like him. But he's not like, I'm not going, oh my gosh, The Rock is in it. I've got to see that.
Right. Yeah,
you know
I
what I mean?
I can see that, sure.
And so it was, you know, Jumanji. We loved it. More more laughs per minute than any movie I've seen in a long, long time.
I've heard good reviews of that somehow.
Really?
That's bizarre.
You have to see it. Oh. It's more laughs per minute than any movie you've seen in years. Jumanji. Huh.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
Oh my gosh, did you see Oprah's speech? Oh my gosh, I'm still a tingle. Oh my gosh, I hope she runs. That's all you're hearing in the media now. Oh my gosh, did you see her speech? It was so powerful. So powerful. Yes, she made movies with Harvey Weinstein, and she kind of was his wingman at parties and stuff, but... No, she means it now.
Uh-huh.
Some people called her speech on sexual assault victims empowering. One did not. British actress Caden Noble, she said it was hypocritical. She claims that Harvey Weinstein used his relationship with Oprah to seduce young actresses like her. She said, the actress said Weinstein would cavort around parties with Oprah by his side, duping young women into thinking that he was charming and a safe person to be around. He used Oprah to make him look like a good guy. Now, to Oprah's defense here, she may have been unaware that she was being used as a wingman for Weinstein's sordid intentions, but I don't know, that kind of seems impossible to me. I mean, if I knew, I don't run around in those circles. If I knew the rumors, if I knew everything that they said about him, it wasn't like, he's had a couple of things. It was everybody. It was everybody. Oprah has been friends with Weinstein for decades. She just co-produced The Butler with him a couple of years ago. She couldn't even bring herself to blame him personally at the Golden Globes. She said, if we make this just about Harvey, well, then we've lost this watershed moment. How can Oprah, who is a multiple rape survivor herself, how is she not utterly disgusted by Harvey Weinstein? How did she stand by him for so long? Because he's her friend. Just like Bill Clinton is Oprah's friend. During the Golden Globes, Juanita Broderick tweeted, hey, Oprah, you didn't mention my story about Bill Clinton, you know, raping me. And you've had Bill on your show over and over and over again. So how can somebody so passionately call for sexual abuse victims to have a voice, silence them with her own actions and relationships? If Oprah decides to run in the future, it's like Ricky used to say to Lucy, you're going to have a lot of splaining to do. There's an old proverb says, if you want to know a man, look at his friends. If you want to know Oprah, look at some of her friends.
It's Tuesday, January 9th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
You know, we forget that Oprah was a member of Jeremiah Wright's church. I mean, she is out there. And once You know, she had a big fall once people started to figure out who she was, once she wasn't packaged. Personally, I think that if it was a race between Donald Trump and Oprah Winfrey, you could just hold the election today. Yeah. Just hold it. Because there's no, I mean, what are you going to do? We need to hear a debate between these two? No. Nobody's going to change their mind. If you're for Oprah Winfrey and against Donald Trump, nothing's going to change your mind. And if you're for Donald Trump and against Oprah Winfrey, nothing's going to change your mind. Nothing. So why? Let's just save all the time. Just, hey, these two are going to be on the ballot in November. Decide. And then just leave it at that. I'm perfectly fine.
Save a lot of time, a lot of donations, annoying commercials.
Yeah.
It really would.
Let's do something constructive with our time, you know, instead of taking these two celebrities and watch which one can put on a better show.
We have previews, kind of like what I think you would expect of what the commercials would be like. So, like, this, I guess, would be Oprah's first commercial from Donald Trump in 1999. Here's what Donald said about Oprah.
You have a vice presidential candidate in mind?
Well, I really haven't gotten quite there yet. I love Oprah. Oprah would always be my first choice.
Oprah,
your competitor, right?
Oprah's a competitor.
You know what?
I'll
tell you, she's really a great woman, though. She is a terrific woman. She's somebody that's very special. I have not even thought about it. I guess we'll see. We'll see. Maybe that's part of the whole process.
Would she be kidding aside, that you might think about?
If she'd do it, she'd be fantastic. I mean, she's popular. She's brilliant. She's a wonderful woman. I mean, if she'd ever do it. I don't know that she'd ever do it. She's got.
You'd ask her.
She'd be sort of like me. I mean, I have a lot of things going. She's got a lot of things going.
What a ticket
in terms of that would be a pretty good ticket. But she's a very exceptional woman.
I guess that's your. I mean, none of this obviously makes any difference. I mean, it was a long time ago.
Yeah, this is what he does to everybody.
Everybody he likes, he kind of compliments the same way.
Yeah, and then when Oprah said one thing bad about him, he would be, she's a failure.
Right.
She's on a,
yeah.
You know, I mean, that's normal.
And then on the other side, I guess maybe Donald could play the clips of Oprah wishing white people would be dead. I mean, maybe that would be a.
Oh boy, I haven't heard this.
It's a while ago, listen.
As long as people can be judged by the color of their skin, the problem's not solved. There are still generations of people, older people, who were born and bred and marinated in it, in that prejudice and racism, and they just have to die.
She says...
I think she's right.
She's saying
the way
right.
She means it.
Yeah, the way she means it, I think, is that.
Yeah, and she didn't say white people. She said people who were born, as long as we judge people by the color of their skin.
Hmm.
I'm sorry. Now, Oprah may not believe this, but racism is a human problem, not a white problem.
How dare you?
Yeah, I know.
How dare you?
And you know,
only white people are capable of it.
There is something to be said with, you know, sometimes generations just have to pass before real change can, because they're just hanging on and they just won't let go.
Yeah.
They just won't let go.
I guess you could come up with the same justification for this clip from Oprah. It's kind of short, but here it is.
My vajayjay is painting.
Now, I don't know if that's exactly, she would lead a commercial with
my
talk about.
My vajayjay is painin'.
Is painin', and that, I believe that means there's a.
I don't.
My vajayjay is painin'.
All right.
See, it hurts,
I don't need
I
to
think,
hear anymore.
Is what painin' means. And the vajayjay, I'm not exactly sure what.
Can we change the subject?
Is that medical terminology or?
My vajayjay is painin'.
Oh, okay, now we know.
You know what would make that better?
Anything
that on the new Samsung TV? Have you heard about the new Samsung TV?
I don't think that would make it better at all, but go ahead.
Oh, you don't think so?
Saying here, Oprah talking about her vajayjay.
My vajayjay is painin'.
I don't think, no.
Okay, all right, not all right. Maybe not. Samsung has introduced their new TV. It is a micro LED. They say it is the screen of the future. It's called the wall.
The wall.
The wall.
So they are building the wall. We finally know.
We finally.
That's happening.
I hope Mexico pays for it because I want one. It's 146 inches wide.
Wow. From corner to corner.
It's 146 inch TV.
That's nice.
That it is.
That's nice.
That's a movie theater in your house.
Because that's not a projection screen either. That's an actual.
No, that's an actual.
LED
and they
TV.
Say that it is micrometer scale LEDs, which are smaller than current LEDs and serve as their own source of light. That means for the average human being that the TV doesn't need a backlight. The TV is modular, which means anyone buying the wall can customize it any way you want. The screen can adapt to serve several different purposes, such as creating a wall size display for multiple spaces. So I don't know if this is like a Lego TV. I'm not sure what that is.
$299. Is that my,
modular means you could customize this to be larger or smaller than 146 inches.
What?
For Samsung's purposes, the version being released this year is the 146 inch variety. The wall has no price yet or a release date, but this is going to this is going to cost a ton of cash. Samsung says between the size, the pedigree of the company, and the new technology it's using, the wall will cost a lot of money.
Wait, Samsung is saying it?
A lot of money.
Wow, when people try to sell it, they're telling you it's going to cost a lot.
Then the comment is, think tens of thousands of dollars.
Holy crap.
They have not given an official price yet. And the press event for the wall is scheduled for March.
I want one.
Oh, my gosh. You know, but the problem is, it'll be like this year, it'll be $50,000. And in 2 years, you'll be pushing your cart down Costco and it'll be like on sale for $199. What? How big is 147?
Oh, is that like the chalkboard? How half that chalkboard? Well, it's corner to corner. They did a diagonal across how they measure screens. 10 feet is 120. So, that's a big boy.
Now,
projection screens, though, can be. I mean, that's even big for a projection screen. But, I mean, like, if you some of the newer, bigger houses have, like, theater rooms in them.
Yeah.
And a projection screen could be.
But have you seen projection screens?
Totally. Yeah.
It's totally different.
Yeah,
it's totally different.
Yeah. I mean, that's an amazing. Now, I will say Samsung should know if they want to get publicity for this. Obviously, like something like a television show where we could put it on the wall here. We have walls in the studio.
Or
we could show people every day.
A radio show that the host has one in their house.
Multiple people on the show have them in their homes.
I think just one would be fine.
Thank you for that. I appreciate that. You can have one, too. You can come over and see it if you want.
Holy cow. All right. Let me talk to you about Goldline. Goldline has been purchased by a very large company. In fact, I think they are like the largest wholesaler of precious metals, I don't know, in the world or the country or I don't know what it is. It's huge. And what they did is they came in and they did a giant blowout sale, and it was so popular that they are going to continue with the special pricing in a New Year kickoff sale. Goldline, the new ownership, is going to take care of you in price. The people that have been there forever are going to take care of you like they always have. They're going to take care of you with customer service, and they're just really good guys. Now they have discounted prices on their most popular products. They're also offering starter kits where you can buy one gold legal tender bar. It's a card with 60 silver rounds at their employee cost. That's not been done before. The reason why they can do this is now, because they have this company behind them, they're buying so much that they're getting the best prices available, which means you're going to get the best prices. Call now, learn more about Goldline, and they'll send you a free half-ounce silver just for listening. Free half-ounce of silver just for calling them up right now. Call Goldline, 866-GOLDLINE, 1-866-465-3546. Get a half-ounce of silver. They'll send it to you just for calling them right now. Make sure you read their important risk information. Find out if buying gold or silver is right for you. But if it is, the people, the only people that I would trust, Goldline. 1-866-GOLDLINE. 1-866-GOLDLINE or goldline.com.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. Glenn Beck.
But my JJ is painting.
We don't.
I mean, if you want to have a good, solid Oprah 2020 slogan, I think it definitely is.
But my JJ is painting.
Oprah 2020. I mean, she wins with that argument, I think. None of that stuff makes any difference, though. I mean, you could. It doesn't matter anymore. I mean, the stuff that Al Franken said in his career, Trump obviously said a lot in his career. None of that stuff makes a difference.
None of it. Nope. Try this exercise. Another girl, Bailey Gibson. She's 23. She is auctioning her virginity off. She's a good girl, she says.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She's a good girl gone bad. And she's... She's selling her virginity after giving up on marriage following a rough breakup. So she grew up in California. Christian foster parents. They must be so happy. She said she was very sheltered from the outside world, but something snapped when her ex-boyfriend cheated on her. I learned that love can be very deceiving when I discovered that he slept with his ex on Valentine's Day. However, being naive, a 19-year-old that I was, I thought that if I stayed with him and we enrolled in couples therapy, we could make our relationship right again. At that point, I had virtually nobody, and my ex-boyfriend brought me companionship, so I stayed foolishly, only to be heartbroken after one of the couples in our therapy sessions said that he had already met and slept with someone else on their first date. So she did what every girl would do. She ran to the Bunny Ranch.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good establishment.
Carson City.
Mm-hmm.
And she said... she sold her virginity. she's going to earn 50% of the winning bid. You know, the Bunny Ranch gets the other.
50% is a hell of a charge on this one. And where they're giving her the room? I mean,
well, they're selling it.
Seems like you should shop that one around to other establishments, try to get maybe a 10% commission.
Yeah.
Maybe they get, 50% for selling your virginity.
Society perceives me as a deviant, she said, and I'm okay with that. At the end of the day, it's my body. I have the right to do with it what I want. And going through the Bunny Ranch allows me to legally have sex for money. Does this make me a prostitute? Nah, I don't think so.
That's actually, by definition, does actually make you a prostitute.
She says, if I take a picture once, does that make me a photographer?
That's an awesome argument. You could justify anything with that. That's fantastic.
I've only done it once. I've only killed one person.
Does that make me a murderer? Yes, it does.
When the definition is taking money for sex, yes.
Yeah, it kind of does. There's certain activities. When you do them once, it kind of defines you. You know, I mean, it's a sad state of affairs.
And isn't this playing on the feelings of a young girl in distress?
Oh,
I mean, she had saved her virginity. She was, she was going in a completely different direction. She gets scorned by a man who cheats on her twice. And so then she's like, I'm going to sell my virginity. Hello? Where's Oprah?
Well, she's saying something like this.
But my vajayjay is painting.
Yeah,
she might. Mm-hmm. That might, in this particular case, be a good thing to say that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess what would you expect from a society that is planning to run someone who is quoted as saying,
"Okay,
but my vajayjay is painting."
That's, you don't need to.
I think that's probably. It's really. It's quite sad. Quite sad.
I think this is not a good really. Story. I think these are really sad stories. This is like the third one in like 4 months.
And what was the last one? Wasn't it a lot of money?
It was like $3 million.
Because I remember we did a story on I think it was a Netflix documentary, Hot Girls Wanted. Do you remember this?
Yeah, and you saw it. Told I me I should it. Watch it. I never got around.
Yeah, I don't know. But it was about basically like these ads that pop up in online and in publications. Mm. Hot Girls Wanted, come here, do some modeling, and of course they show up, and what is it? It's porn, right? And they followed a couple of the girls who went on these trips. They're between like 18 and 22 years old. And they go and they would respond to these ads and they would get talked into doing porn. And then all of a sudden they're, I guess I'm in the porn world now. And they stay in the porn world and they go through it. And they showed like the amounts of money. They went through the finances of their situations. It was not $3 million these girls were walking out with. I want to say the main girl they focused on went there for 6 months and did, you know, a dozen or more porn movies and then came back with, I think, $1,500 in her pocket.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's like, you know, as bad as it is.
Your
like,
first porn film, the gift that just keeps on giving.
That one keeps on giving monthly for quite a long time.
Long time.
Every time you open up that pill box, it keeps giving. But it's an interesting part of like thinking of it's, you know, when you have someone who's auctioning off their virginity at 18 years old and they're getting $3 million, there's a sad amount of people who sign up for that deal, right? Like there's a lot of people who are like, you know what? I mean, I don't think this is a good idea,
but
for $3 million,
a lot of people are going to do that. I think there's a ton. Now remember, $3 million though, that wasn't going to the Bunny Ranch. That was $3 million. You had to go to Bahrain for that one.
Yeah, that one was... yeah. This one, you think, especially with the Bunny Ranch getting 50%, she may be having sex for the first time. She needs to go to negotiating school next time does this, because that is the...
Well, she can't do it the next time.
That's a good point. That would be very difficult to accomplish.
Well, no, it
after
wouldn't
time
be
one.
Difficult, but selling her virginity, that's a kind of a one-time deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of a... Yeah, but again, smarter, bad on negotiating, smarter than the woman who sold it to the oligarch in Russia or
Glenn
the guy
Beck.
In Bahrain.
Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Okay. I saw, you know, I was putting show prep together last night, and I saw, you know, all the stories, and there's a lot of important stories, but there is no more important story than Samsung and their new 147-inch TV.
I think of the Common Era, you know, or as we used to call it, AD.
Yeah.
It's the biggest story that's ever happened.
Really?
Biggest story since Jesus.
Jesus was born, not Jesus died.
Jesus born and died. And then.
All right.
The biggest story we've had.
All right. Okay. All right. It's 100. Grab this tape measure. It's 147.
146 inches.
146. Oh, my gosh.
Does this even go up to that?
Wait. Yeah, it does.
Okay. How big is that, do you think?
900 inches?
That's 97.
Okay.
So they're all the way across
97.
Wow.
Okay. All the way across the table at this point.
This is...
Oh, my gosh.
How much?
146?
146.
This
to there?
Is a 146-inch television.
Wow.
That's
put your side down on the table.
It's going to be diagonal.
It's diagonal.
Yeah.
So like perfect, that's still huge.
That's incredible.
I had the perfect vantage point here to see that, and that would be a nice TV to watch.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah,
oh
that would be
gosh.
Nice.
Yeah,
that's bigger
that.
Than a theater
Name
screen, you know, the home theater screens, which are about 10 feet.
That is bigger than most conference room tables.
Oh, yeah, I think so. I thought the 75-inch screen that Jackie bought me for Christmas a couple years ago was huge. This is more than double that size.
That's crazy.
Or about double that size. It's almost double that
They're
size.
They're saying that it's coming out in March. They haven't announced the price, but they said it's going to
be
expensive.
It's going to be $50,000 at least, right?
It's got to be.
$50,000 and then
do you remember
we'll get
when
it
we
at
worked
Kmart
at,
in 2 years.
When we went to Fox, when I was on that first set, there was a TV screen in the wall, and it was 107 inches. And I was told, don't touch the wall. That's what they actually said. Don't touch it. Oh, okay.
Because it could break, or
no? Because it cost $110,000 or $120,000 at the time.
Wow,
it was 107.
Did it do special things, or
nope.
Was it just a monitor?
Nope, it was just a monitor. But it was so rare, and just I mean,
that was at Fox. So that would have been 2009.
Yeah,
look how far we've come.
Yeah,
so fast.
Yeah, they say this is not. Read the. Do you have the story? I think I threw mine away.
Yeah, you want
to? Yeah, the new technology that it has. It's not even. It's a self-emitting TV with micrometer scale LEDs.
I don't know what that means, but it sounds really good.
It sounds great.
It sounds like it's going to be a good picture.
They say the TV is modular, which means anyone buying the wall can customize it.
In what way?
The screen can adapt to serve different purposes, such as creating a wall-sized display for multiple spaces.
Oh, man.
It's modular, which means you can customize this screen to be even larger than 146 inches or smaller. The only version that is being released this year is the 146-inch variety. Yes, please.
Yes.
Yes, yes, please.
I mean, there's no way point I could do pay not for it.
At what point do you not leave your house?
Well, I would have thought it would have been before now because we've got everything we need at home. I'm not sure. And oftentimes, rather than go to a movie some weekend, we just decide, let's just stay here and watch something. Because you can watch almost everything if it's been out for 3 months.
Not even 3 months.
Yeah. And you can have access to it in 5 seconds. And we've got these incredible screens. You're comfortable. You can eat whatever you want to. You don't have to pay extra for it.
You can have somebody else go pick up the food from any restaurant.
Yep. Deliver it right to your door.
Yeah, you can get a giant screen to watch Oprah say,
"But my vajayjay is painting."
You know, there's a lot of options.
I don't.
We're going to have a battle of the great quotes in 2020,
aren't we? It's going to be solid.
I can even grab their vajayjay.
That's actually a conversation.
Yeah,
I would grab their, and then she responds, can say,
"But my vajayjay is painting."
That could be the first seat of the debate.
Can we see if we can get that quote and put those two together? I'd like to see it as a conversation.
It really is a conversation.
As a celebrity, they'll let you do anything. I can grab them by the...
"But my vajayjay is painting."
And then it'll be
followed up with her.
It's a logical response to the first part of the conversation.
It is. And it would have been an effective response at the debate.
Hillary should have said it.
Yeah.
If Hillary came out and just blurted out at the debate,
"But my vajayjay is painting,"
she wins that election by 12.
She would have.
Yeah.
Well, she wouldn't have, because it would have been so creepy for her to say it. I mean, it's uncomfortable to hear it from Oprah, but it would have been downright creepy to hear it from Hillary.
Can you imagine Hillary trying to do that with like that sort of like understanding slang way that she does? She kind of like, "Oh my God."
It's like your grandmother saying that.
Oh.
Well, you remember when
JJ is painting.
When she was campaigning in the South during the, I think it was the 2008 campaign, and she did that phony, stupid, really bad accent.
Accent, the poem.
Right?
It does not work with her.
Yeah.
It doesn't work
with her.
Nothing
works with her.
No.
Nothing works with her.
Speaking of the presidential race, the president was at the national championship game. I'm sure you didn't see this, Glenn, but did you notice that, they had one camera on Donald Trump the whole time because he was there, walked out on the field. It was kind of cool. Now, they said there were boos. I didn't hear any.
I didn't hear any either.
I heard a pretty good response to him.
Good response. May I just point this out? Do you guys remember standing in the crowd at the Tonight Show?
Yes.
Okay. You want to explain what happened?
When you came out, there was wild applause.
And a standing ovation.
Despite that, Jay Leno said, "Now you don't boo. Stop booing."
Yeah.
Something to that effect. He mentioned the boos.
It's a little split here. There's some boos.
Some booing, and
there were no boos.
I didn't hear a single one.
It was a standing ovation.
It was silly,
and it was written. I was standing backstage, and I was watching the prompter. It was written into the prompter.
So they obviously were expecting or just going to say.
Yeah, or just
regardless.
Whatever.
And of all people in Hollywood, I mean, Jay Leno is not exactly the worst guy to conservatives. I mean, he was always good to you. And
he was good to me.
Yeah.
And he was kind. But
that's just the way they write those shows. They just assume everyone's going to hate the conservative that comes on.
So, I mean, so when they say there were boos last night with Donald Trump.
They make that stuff up.
Yeah.
Smattering or not, I didn't hear a single one at all. But they focused on him the entire national anthem. And he would sing a line and then stop for a while. And then he'd sing a line and then stop for a while. So everybody's speculating now that he doesn't know the words to the national anthem.
He does. He just can't pay attention that long.
Yeah.
That's probably it.
It is.
That's probably
He's
it.
He's like, wait a minute. Last night? I got to remember to call her back. And the rock is ready. Soup. I love soup.
That makes more sense.
That's exactly what happened. Thanks, Pat.
By the way, Walmart.com right now, a Philips 55-inch Class 4K Smart LED TV, $398.
$300? How big is it?
55 inches. I mean, that's a solid TV. $398.
Do you remember on my 40th birthday? Is it my 40th birthday? Had to be. My 40th birthday, my wife got me a brand new, it was the first flat screen monitor.
Oh, I remember that.
Remember?
Oh, that was a big deal.
It was a big deal. It was the first, it was a Sony Trinitron, first flat panel. Okay. Not high def, nothing. Just hang it on the wall. First one made. $10,000.
And then within, what, a year?
2 years.
Yeah.
It was
1,000. Yep.
Now 50, and it wasn't even 55 inches. It was probably 40.
Maybe. I mean, it wasn't a big TV.
No.
And not, as you point out, not HD.
No, nothing. It's a dinosaur now. We still have it. It's a dinosaur. Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. Every time you go to like Walmart or Target, you walk around the electronics section and those TVs, I just want to buy them and like leave them around the house. It seemed like they've just mispriced them. They're so cheap.
So I swear to you, I was in a Walmart a couple of weeks ago, and because I always hang out in there, you know, well, she's going to get whatever she's going to get. And I'm hanging out at the electronics. I swear to you, I was walking up to a thing, and I thought it was a picture, a photo on this gigantic screen. I didn't think it was on. I thought it had a photo on it because it looked so perfect.
Yeah.
And I walk up, and I'm like, no, it's just a still on this screen. That's the
4K situation.
Yeah, it was 4K ultra whatever. Right. It was like, oh my gosh,
it's amazing. A lot of people like Walmart gets criticism because it's like, look at it. It's just, you know, they all look the same, and you go in there, everything's bright white, and it's all these goods, and it's all consumerism. I walk in there and I think to myself, this is a miracle.
At Walmart?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It is a miracle that this stuff is all here at these prices. That they come from all around the world. Hundreds of people with their hands on different pieces of the technology, of the electronics, of the shipping, of the manufacturing. And it's all come to this one place in the middle of like Alabama somehow. And it is a miracle. The stuff that you can afford at these places, it's never before. Every year it gets better. Every year it gets better. It's so funny. We get so focused on how crappy so many things have become in the world. And it's all true. There's a lot of bad things that are going on. But we lose sight of how much
technology
this stuff
is not
improved.
One of them.
Technology is a big part of it. But take out the technology. You go aisle to aisle with so many foods, so many varieties.
I can't remember.
So many things.
I can't remember the number. But like when I was growing up, there were like, I don't even know, 4,000 different items in the average store. Now, a bad grocery store has like 12,000 items, and the average has 40,000 items. And you go to a really, really good one where they've got like 1,400 different kinds of ketchup, and you're like, I just want ketchup. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And where this comes in on technology is, you know that Amazon, you drive by, if you see any of their, you know, regional centers, they're gigantic.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like 14 football fields of storage. Those things are so well done now. The algorithms are so close that they order everything for the week, and they have it so close that they're only off between 3% and 5% of any week. So they'll sell through 97% of what they have. And the algorithm knows in this region, they're going to need this. In this region, they're going to need this. And the algorithms are getting so tight. When they're starting to, Alexa? Mm-hmm. When Alexa is really in our home, you're not going to have to ask. You won't ask. It will just come. It will know. And it will just come to your house.
And then you cross the line a little bit of creepiness, but still, you know what? It'll be so great.
No, because I will be sitting there at the 147 and going, man, I wish I had a box of donuts. Oh, here it is. Thanks, Alexa.
Totally. I, like, it's like the iPhone 10. I got the iPhone 10 when it came out. It was time for me to, my phone was dying. So I got the 10. I'm like, well, I'm not going to go with, let's go for it. Let's see what it's like. And the thing they keep advertising on the iPhone commercials is the Face ID, which recognizes your face. That's your password. Your face is your password. And I thought to myself, that's a dumb thing to advertise. So what? Like my old phone, I put my finger on it and it scanned my fingerprint and I got in, which was an amazing achievement at the time. But again, like, what? Is it going to save me a quarter of a second? I have to not move my thumb a half an inch to the thing. It is. So, I can't believe I lived a day without Face ID. I can't even believe I was able to exist on this earth without being able to log into my smartphone without my face.
It's so funny that you say that because we have an old iPad at the house and the kids use it. And they'll come up and they'll be like, Dad, need the password or something. And I keep putting my thumb on that. And they're like, no, Dad, it's the old one. I'm like, oh, my gosh, how did we live without? I don't know what those numbers are.
It's insane.
There's four of them. How am I supposed to retain that?
It happens so fast. I mean, it's within a week. I can't even remember how to log in with my fingerprint.
All right. You want to make your life safer? You want to take a worry away from yourself? Studies show security systems deter burglars, but there's still a burglary in America every 8 seconds. So what do? Well, they find a house usually that just doesn't have a burglar alarm. You remember back in the 80s when burglar alarms were really, really expensive and, you know, families like mine were like, can we just buy the sign and put that up? We don't have the money for all the equipment. We just want the sign that says it's protected by. Simply Safe, you would have paid more for the sign back then than you're going to pay for the entire thing for your house with Simply Safe. It is ridiculously inexpensive, really smart. Sensors will protect every access point of your home. If there's a burglar that tries to break in, it's just not going to happen. Ear-shattering siren. You can also get the cameras that take the picture so you know exactly who set that alarm off. You'll see the face. And Simply Safe has monitoring 24/7, $14.99 a month. And they never lock you into a contract. So do it now. Even a 60-day money-back guarantee, but you're going to love it. The only security system that you should really be looking at. I want you to do your own homework. But you will start there first and then go look everywhere else. You're going to come back to Simply Safe. SimplySafeBeck.com. Go there now. Save big. SimplySafeBeck.com.
Glenn Beck Mercury. Glenn Beck.
So today at glennbeck.com, we have we've broken down the 40 predictions for 2018 from me, and we're covering just the political predictions, and you can vote them up or down. Which ones do you think are crazy? Which ones do you think might happen? You can check it out at glennbeck.com and sign up to get the newsletter, which will have all 40 of them. And your participation is really critical on this. I'd like to add another one, that politically this may be the year that I start drinking again.
Ooh, really?
Joe Arpaio is now officially a candidate for the Senate. If we have Oprah as a candidate for president, President Donald Trump as the president, and Joe Arpaio in the Senate,
Glenn,
I think I need to start drinking again.